Who am I? You sure you want to know? The story of my life is not for the faint of heart. If somebody said it was a happy little tale, if somebody told you I was just your average, ordinary guy, not a care in the world, somebody lied. But let me assure you, this, like any story worth telling, is all about a girl.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Pop Culture Rewind. I'm your host, Travis.
Oh yeah, hey, I'm Chris.
You're back again?
Who else are you going to find?
Fuck if I know. I got nothing. Alright, so, on this spectacular episode... I feel that between the two of us, it may not be enough to talk about the topic at hand. Which is going to be Spider-Man.
We're rewinding
back to the original Sam Raimi trilogy films. And to do that, I had to bring in an expert. No offense to you, Chris.
I admittedly don't know as much as the emissary from hell over here across from me.
We have Brother Chris, Brother Travis. You knew I'd come.
We have Aaron, our good friend Aaron. Welcome, Aaron.
How y'all doing?
Good. Aaron, we've known him for several years, and if there's one guy that if I have a question about Spider-Man or just nerd life in general, I'm going to this man right over here.
Hell, if I got questions about spiders in general, like, he'll know which ones will kill you, which ones won't.
Yeah.
And tell you the wrong ones, yeah. So you're not worried about it when you actually need to be worried about it.
I mean, I'll give you answers, you know, all quips, no thwips. No,
it's just like, we made the right call.
That's why he's here. Puns like that. It's going to be nonstop.
So punny. It's going to be unlimited.
No.
All right, so
everybody's got one.
So it's going to be me and Aaron.
You just Sandmanned it right there.
Oh, jeez. All right, so we're gonna talk about the, like I said, the original trilogy of films. I think I'm gonna stick with what we did on the Transformers episode. I'm gonna just talk about some of the things I liked specifically about the movie, some things I didn't like about the movies, and not necessarily break down the whole movies in general.
We'll be here 8 hours.
Yeah, so not that we haven't done that before, but we're going to do the first three. And then, you know what? After that, depending on how much time we have, we might just delve into the amazing...
or lack thereof.
Yes, movies that came out after that in the attempts to reboot the franchise. Mm-hmm. Hell, there's another movie that just came out, too. We'll get that here shortly, too.
Yeah, Despicable Me 3. It's pretty good.
Yeah. It's pretty good. We'll get to that, too.
Me and AIDS.
Spider-Man number one.
All right.
Kick the speed. Spider-Man number one.
All right. So, where do we start on this? Was, of course, the whole trilogy, Sam Raimi's...
even before that, it was the summer of 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Jurassic Park 3 had come out.
Right.
And if you had enough courage to go see that movie, mm-hmm. the teaser before that was Spider-Man.
Right.
You had the World Trade Center, like during a helicopter heist that got caught.
Oh, such a good trailer.
And
teaser, I should say.
Yeah, big teaser. And then, you know, you see this action happening and you're waiting and waiting. And then all of a sudden, you see a head pop up from behind a building. There's Spidey's head, Trade Center in his reflection of his eyes, giant web in between the Trade Center.
The helicopter, right?
The helicopter. And then that was it. They left you with, you know, coming next summer.
Yeah. Well, then the 9/11 happened.
And every poster that they had of the World Trade Center got pulled.
Yeah.
I was actually bidding on one September 9th.
Oh.
September 9th. The auction was going to end on the 12th.
Of course it would.
The morning of September 12th, I go to check eBay. This item has been pulled from auction.
Oh, really? Wow.
It got pulled. 2 weeks later, it's back up. Now they're asking for $500 plus for this thing. For this poster, the teaser poster of Spider-Man.
Damn.
It took me a long time, but I finally was able to get an original.
Did you?
I got it back in 2007. Finally, I was able to get one for a decent amount.
we won't disclose what the decent amount was.
No. But yeah, it. I mean, even the teaser for that was great.
You know, it was a good wake up call. Yeah. Oh, here we go. Because we're coming off the heels of X-Men and Blade, and this is the first Renaissance. That's the word I'm looking. Renaissance.
The Renaissance.
The Renaissance.
Well, the thing is, even X-Men didn't even get a teaser. They just straight up had a trailer Sabretooth, Wolverine, Rogue, and Magneto, all that. There's no teaser for that. There was no buildup. It was just straight up.
Here you go.
Here's X-Men coming soon.
Yeah.
Spider-Man, you don't know what you're watching. You thought you're watching Mission Impossible movie. What's coming out because of all the action and the bank heist? Mm-hmm. No, that's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And then it just went from there. And they would show bits, like little bits of teasers here and there in other movies. But if you saw Jurassic Park 3, you got to see the original teaser.
But you had to sit through Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Yeah. You could walk out.
You could sleep. I saw this first teaser.
This is coming from Chris.
Who saw the first teaser for Transformers and then slept through the first Pirates of the Caribbean. So I got my money's worth. Yeah.
All right. So that being said, man, this movie came out and I think they just knocked it out of the park as far as a realistic. Going back to, you know, when Superman came out, you can believe a man can fly. You know, that was the thing. This one, you could believe, you know, Spider-Man swinging through New York.
You could crawl buildings and everything.
Right. And, you know, 2002, technology was good, but it's not where it is now.
It was getting better. I mean, you had those PS2 graphics happening.
Right.
The movie still holds up for it being over 15 years old. Yeah, graphics or design or CGI aside.
Yeah.
It still holds up. And I still watch it. Even now, like when there's time, when I have nothing on TV, of course, I don't have cable, so I don't have many options. I have this movie on my iTunes, so I was like, you know what, fuck it, I'll just go back and watch it over here.
For me, it's got a very timeless classic feel, not just comic booky, but it's just something about it. Like you said, it kind of holds up, and it's just.
I think this was also one of the very first romantic superhero movies, because the first sentence is, this is a story about a girl.
True.
As he's chasing a bus, Parker's chasing a bus. So this is like the first kind of romantic action superhero movie that it builds off of, and at the time that hadn't been done.
Because the only thing we had was X-Men and Blade.
X-Men and the old Batmans and the old Supermans, and there really wasn't a love triangle of maybe you could count Superman 2, maybe
a little bit. The closest thing would be Superman and Lois Lane. That'd be the closest
you
could come to.
But there wasn't that love aspect of a kid doing anything he could just to win the heart of a girl.
Which carried through the whole trilogy, too.
Yeah.
For better or worse, we'll get to part three later. But
and it gets it, much worse.
Yeah. But that theme carried. And that was another thing about this whole trilogy. They, as far as the blunder of part three, they still managed to weave in the same themes throughout the whole trilogy.
Yeah.
Like we were saying, like just the look and feel of the film itself, very timeless. And I was watching back the other day and just like the different sets and different things like that, it almost felt maybe it had something to do with the score being done by Danny Elfman, but it felt very Burton-esque.
Yeah.
You know, some of the sets they were using in the street scenes and everything like that, it kind of made me harken back to 89 Batman a little bit.
Well, I know Raimi is very, when it comes to a set design and his camera shots, he's very precise. He knows what he wants. He wants certain scenes, he wants certain shots, he wants certain coloring in there.
Yeah.
That's always been his thing. And I think that's why. If you're a fan of old Raimi films like the Evil Dead series or For the Love of the Game and other stuff like that, he's very color specific and he's very shot and scene specific, and that carried over Spider-Man because nobody had heard Raimi before Spider-Man unless you're a hardcore horror fan.
I did.
Yeah,
but, I know you have.
Yeah, oh yeah, I know. But to the general public, nobody had heard him until.
Let's put that to the test, Chris.
No.
Just had a check.
but yeah, I mean, he's very specific with his shots. And unlike, you know, with like Kubrick and some of the other directors where like they'll do a take over and over and over too, Raimi will do that as well, but he'll change it up to that way it's not the same repetitive thing over and over. He'll change it up to add a little bit to make it seem more organic and you get a great shot. You get a great scene. And that's his style really works well with Spider-Man, with the Spider-Man movie. And that's why I think the first one did so well. Because he had, I think, 60% input of what went into the movie.
The studio had an idea of what they wanted to
see. Studio had an idea of what they wanted. Certain producers had an idea of what they wanted. And then when the sequel, he had more 80% control.
I know where that extra 20% came from, too.
Yeah, and then the third one, he had probably about 30% control.
Yeah.
It went down from there. But yeah, the whole movie is like, it's his introduction to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a good introduction, just of how they shot things.
And on that aspect, I think the first thing that got to my attention was, you would think when a character like Spider-Man, mm-hmm. to get it right, mm-hmm. you would need to do a lot of CGI.
Yeah.
And it really, it doesn't come across that heavy.
No, it doesn't.
You know, and to be able to do it with that kind of character really shows how good he is at what he does. Yeah. Especially, like you said, if he's the horror guy, but he's transitioning to this into this new genre, I couldn't tell the difference. I couldn't tell that this was his first foray into it, because he did it. The first one was really, really good.
It's almost like he was using like old Hollywood trade secrets of seeing the scene and having him just kind of like slide in, mm-hmm. or like just like he's on screen and he's about to, you know, swing away and he just kind of jumps in the camera. Yeah. So things like that where you don't really need CG to get the point across of what's going on.
Well, I remember Raimi, he uses like he's cheap. When he would make his old movies, the old cheap movies, he would use tricks and life hacks or movie hacks to get the things he wants. Mm-hmm. So he took that.
Not
what
cheap,
he learned,
smart.
Smart, cheap. not a lot of money.
Frugal.
He had China budget. But he took that and he brought it to Hollywood, and so he was able to save a lot of money on these tactics, but it worked.
Yeah.
It worked because he knew some of these tricks and how to do them. Again, yeah, like jumping off the screen or, you know, hiding a trampoline over here to make it look like Spidey's jumping higher than what he normally does without the use of cables.
Or just tilting the wall so that he's crawling on the wall, but the way the camera's angled, it looks like he's actually crawling up. Yeah.
Yeah, just turn it sideways, turn the camera sideways, have him crawl on the floor.
Just follow him. Just follow him. We're going to rotate this room. Just follow him.
Yeah,
and it works.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that, too, because to me, that's what goes back when I was saying it's a timeless feeling movie.
First thing I think back to is 66 Batman, having Batman and Robin climbing up that wall, knowing that it's just, now that I know the secret, it's like, oh, that shit was flat. They're just walking.
Like their cape had giant wires in the back of it to make it look like it was falling.
And on to just add on to all that, besides the look and feel of the film, the writing was really good, and also the story they were telling. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's an origin story. Yeah. We got the very first, before it was a joke to have an origin story in a Spider-Man movie, you had to have an origin for him.
Yeah,
and I think they that's one of the things I like about this movie, is with the exception of a few changes to Hollywood. I guess updating things.
Yeah.
I thought they really did a good job.
Yeah.
With all the elements, they had all the classic characters in line the way they needed them to be. And of course, there's some nitpicks, I'm sure, long-time fans would have.
Well, even like, okay, you know, with Spider-Man, there's always the Uncle Ben scene.
Yes.
There's always Uncle Ben.
Right.
But they had a really good actor with Cliff Robinson.
Yes.
He was really good. And he brought the emotion that could pull it, you know, he brought the emotion that you felt, and he pulled it out of Tobey Maguire.
Right.
So when they're having that moment, it feels real.
Chucks you up a little bit. Yeah.
It feels real. Now, when other iterations happen, it doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel that real, but Cliff Robinson had that emotional drive. He's a trained actor. He's been doing a lot of other movies.
Right.
He's good.
Yeah.
And I think that they hit a home run with casting him as Ben.
Mm.
And
Rosemary Harris as Aunt May.
She was really good, too.
Because they again, going back to the classic feel of the characters and everything, one of my earliest images I have of Aunt May is gray-haired lady with a bun in her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. You had it in, you know,
Spider-Man. Well, not just the gray-haired lady, but, like, you know, a smart-like gray-haired lady. You know, someone who doesn't take anything.
Yeah.
You know, she'll stand up for herself and she'll speak her mind, which is what Rosemary did. She brought that element of May into that movie.
There's a scene in part two, jumping ahead a little bit, but there's a scene in there where she's trying to give him money.
Mm-hmm.
And
he doesn't want it, and she goes, take it.
Yeah. Oh, I got, like, choked up. Just like, oh, God, that was so... The way she almost tears up right then and there.
Well, no, was because she owes money.
Yeah.
But she's giving him money.
Right, exactly. And he's like, no, you need this more than I do, and she just... forced him to... really good scene. And who can't relate to that kind of stuff, you know, so... And that's another thing. I think what knocks 1 and 2 such out of the park is the themes. Like, everybody can relate to what's going on in those the first two movies.
No, Dad, you can't tell me what to do. Oh, wait, you're not my dad. Man. Yeah.
And that's the last time you see him, and there you go.
And you're,
Which, another good scene in this movie,
Macho Man.
There you go.
Macho Man.
Bonesaw.
Bonesaw McGraw.
You got an impression that you want? No?
I got you for 3 minutes, son. 3 minutes of playtime. Yeah.
Wait, that wasn't the script.
Bonesaw is ready. Oh, man. So, wrestling fans, any wrestling fans will know.
Well, not just wrestling fans, like beef jerky fans will know who that is.
Like,
well, Macho Man, he's such a pop culture icon. I mean, who doesn't know who he is?
Yeah, and, but once the last company...
For our generation.
Yeah, once the last company that he worked for, World Championship Wrestling, went out of business, you're going to wonder, hey, what's... Where am I going to see the guys that I used to like the most? Not to mention he has so much heritage from like 20, 30 years of popularity from wrestling.
His voice is...
This is the voice alone.
The voice alone. You can turn on like an episode of King of the Hill and you'll hear him voice do like a voice character.
Oh, man. He did a voice on Space Ghost Coast to Coast. That was so good.
What, the movie Bolt? He was in there as one of the henchmen?
He's got that
recognizable voice. He's one of the few people who have that recognizes the voice. So when you see somebody in the ring and you hear that voice, Bonesaw is ready. You're like, oh, it's a macho man. It's a Macho Man.
Yeah.
And then we get the first person who actually can beat Spider-Man in more than one film, and that's Bruce Campbell.
That's Bruce Campbell. Raimi's best friend. One of his old childhood friends.
Yeah.
That he came up with. I'm a little surprised that Ted Raimi wasn't in this movie.
He didn't come until part two, right?
Yeah, he didn't come until part two and part three. But yeah, Raimi was in it. His brother Ted wasn't in here. But yeah, Bruce Campbell, golden blazer and all, sunglasses.
It's only Bruce Campbell can wear.
Only he could pull it off. You know, classic line. Hey, kid, what's your name? The Human Spider. Oh, that sucks, man.
kid. And then he gave him his name.
He gave him his name.
He got my name wrong.
He's like, shut the fuck up. Pushes him out.
Wasn't that Sam Raimi's hand that pushed him?
Yeah. That was Raimi's hand pushing him out. Because it's something like as Toby was ad-libbing, and they were wasting film of him ad-libbing, so he's like, just go.
Yeah.
Pushes him out.
Because he's smart.
He's smart. This is... You know, comic fans, this is Spidey's attempt to make money. If in your old comic series, one of his downfalls is that he takes his newfound power and he wants to make money off of it. He wants to cash in. And it causes a tragedy. And so this is that element. He beats Macho Man under 3 minutes. He didn't last 3 minutes. He beat him under 3 minutes.
And he gets 100.
And the promoter stiffs him. Now, I know a few promoters here around the area who do stiff their workers.
That's racist.
What? What was that? Sucker? Sucker? What'd you say? I know a few promoters who've done that.
Not naming names.
But that does seem pretty likely, and that sets off a chain of events. Guy comes in and robs promoter. Guy runs out. Parker lets him run by. That's it. And then go outside.
I forgot where it was my problem.
And that's it. And that sets up like one of the most emotional parts in the film. And that's with Uncle Ben getting shot. Mm-hmm. And that cry fest.
Well, you mentioned Cliff Robertson, and we talked about Rosemary Harrison. Mm-hmm. Strong cast all around. For the time, Tobey Maguire... I mean, he did a good job as...
He came off of, was it Pleasantville?
Yeah.
And there's another movie he did, too.
Something with the horse,
No, Seed Biscuit was after part two.
Oh, was that later?
Yeah,
because
he got injured.
Okay.
Got injured.
Yeah.
No, he did Pleasantville, and he did... There's another movie that he was a part of that... But Pleasantville is what set him up for Spider-Man.
I remember Pleasantville, but I don't remember anything before that. But yeah, I know there was something else.
There was something else before. I can't remember it. But he came up right off of that. And I'm just going to say this. That robber who robbed the promoter, I thought that was Tommy Dreamer when I first saw it. That looked just like Tommy Dreamer. I thought that was him.
For anyone that doesn't know, let him know who Tommy Dreamer is.
He's a wrestler. Okay, yeah. What do I gotta tell him? He's the one that mentioned him.
he is a wrestler.
Then we have Kirsten Dunst.
She was one of the It girls at the time.
Yeah.
Because you had her, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Rachel Leigh Cook, and maybe Melissa Joan Hart were like the it girls at that time.
Wow, surprised you still remember all that.
well, this is like after the time period of Topanga and Kelly Kapowski the original Pink Ranger. You had to kind of move on.
Oh, Amy Jo Johnson.
Yeah. Amy Jo Johnson, A double J.
I was never a big fan of Kirsten Dunst, but what they were going for with her, especially again changing the origin a little bit of her being the girl next door.
Yeah,
I think she's got that look of girl next door.
I think she's got the look, but she sounds. She doesn't have the sound because Mary Jane Watson's supposed to have that really kind of sexy voice.
Well, Mary Jane Watson is supposed to be a very sexy character.
She's supposed to be a party girl.
Yeah,
a party girl. And nothing about Kirsten Dunst says party until you get a few drinks into her. So I mean,
wasn't in the movie.
It was in my movie. But yeah, nothing about her says that. So I know that she was up for the role. Michelle Williams is up for the role, and. What the fuck's her name? I just said her name.
Melissa Joan Hart.
The chick from Scooby-Doo?
Yeah. Sarah Michelle Gellar was up for the role. Yeah. And none of them got it. And they gave it to Kirsten Dunst. Which... She did good.
She did. It wasn't bad, but it didn't blow me away or anything.
Yeah, it just... The chemistry between her and Tobey Maguire just wasn't there.
She was nice to look at. She's very attractive. Yeah, as soon as she starts talking.
Especially in the rainy night.
The rain scene, yeah. It's great to look. I mean, you know
somebody's
she was cold.
We had to go there.
VHF at some point. UHF.
It took us 21 minutes, but we got to that point.
Points.
There you go.
There are two of them.
Well, technically, it took us that long to get to our first con. So I think we're all in agreement. Kirsten Dunst just... I mean, at the time, you know, you just named all the number one contenders, and Kirsten was the champ. But now, it wasn't like it's one thing if you're gonna just like sell yourself as like visually, but as soon as she starts talking, like it doesn't work for me.
Sounds like a catfish.
If
I've had that beer.
if that kind of brought you down a little bit. There's one person in this cast that can bring you back up to the very top.
Oh, he's if anyone was born to play a character, period, at all, perfect to the T, or in this case, the J, is J. Jonah Jameson.
The Triple J.
Triple J. J.K. Sims was created by his parents to play this role.
That was his calling in life.
Down to the buzz cut hair, the cigar, the voice.
The Hitler stash.
The stash. My God, this guy was born to play this role.
And it's funny. It's not just he looks like him, but the way he brought that over-the-top, overbearing character to life.
It's just consistency throughout the entire franchise.
Yeah.
Because of that consistency, I actually have it in my notes. Oh, just as interesting as a villain is J. Jonah Jameson, because he's persistent as just like every other villain in this entire series. He's bad. He's evil. I'm going to prove it. Dude, he's fucking everything he was.
But that was a pay. There was a payoff to that in part two.
Yeah,
when he thought that he retired.
Yeah.
Oh, the deleted scene where he's like put the costume on.
Oh, I didn't know about that. No, but whatever. No, when he's got this suit
on the wall,
yeah. And he's like, man, he really was a hero. Blah blah blah, and he turns around and he's gone. He's a thief.
He's a menace. I can talk about your fake news. He was the one who started fake news,
right?
It's the whole smear campaign, the menace,
and never stopped. Except for it's about to stop until he stole a suit.
But even the introduction of him when Parker walks in there with the photos of Spider-Man, he's like, tickle him, crap, mega crap, and he hands him back. Okay, sir. No, Ted Raimi wasn't here. He was in the newsroom. So I was wrong about that. But you know, Cliff Robinson comes. No, not Cliff Robinson. Robbie Robinson goes, sir, we lost the front page. Let me see those pictures. I'll give you $20.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. You'll love it. You'll be freelance. It's great.
Yeah. Oh, because he wants a job. He's like, yeah, I want a job. Job? No, you don't want a job.
Kid your age, you'll be out having fun. Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, just his introduction was freaking hilarious. It's just from the start. You know what you got with him, and it just kept going. It was just persistent.
It's one of the few pros of part three for me.
Yeah, one of the only pros of part three.
Yeah. Okay, so you kind of said he was a villain, but there was an actual villain.
Yeah.
And that's Green Goblin, Norman Osborn.
Yeah, Green Goblin. Or the Power Ranger, the Green Ranger.
I have that as a con, actually, the design of the mask itself.
Originally, Raimi wanted to do a mutation to where Defoe would wear prosthetics, where that way he would still have the goblin face, so he would just mutate into the goblin, and they would have prosthetics. And they actually filmed the hospital scene was one of the very first scenes they filmed. So when Aunt May's like, "Oh no, the yellow eyes," or no, she's telling Peter, "The yellow eyes, the yellow eyes," it's because they're going off the prosthetics.
Oh.
Defoe didn't want to do that. He didn't want to wear prosthetics. He wanted to wear a suit like Spider-Man did. And so they changed the script a bit, and they changed his costume to what we saw. The only cool thing about that is that the paint scheme for the Goblin suit was actually patented, and they used for to use for cars, because a lot of cars started using it with, you know, the transition from green to purple paint.
Oh yeah,
that is called Goblin.
Hmm.
And you see, like, I mean, when the movie came out, you saw like a lot of rappers have that paint scheme on their car.
Yeah,
that was a big deal, and they marketed that as Goblin paint because of where it came from in the movie, where it would transition from green to purple, or purple to green depending on the light.
Right. The way you look at it.
The way you look at it, yeah. But yeah, that suit.
When I rewatched the movie, his introduction on the with the parade scene,
yeah,
and he comes in. That looks badass, I think. Yeah. When you hear him laughing, and you see him gliding around. That's classic. That just felt like classic Goblin.
That's classic.
Yeah. And you see it from a distance.
You see the silhouette. You see the silhouette coming in the view.
Yeah.
And like, okay, that's great.
Yeah.
You see the glove. I'm like, okay, that's great. Right. Then you see the full shirt. I'm like, what the fuck? I remember seeing like the promotional pic for that. Like a month before they released it, they showed the Goblin pic. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Where's the purple? Where's like the satchel, the messenger bag? You know, where's all of that?
I kind of wish on the suit. I understand the look they were going for and how it was made in the movie wise. Yeah. Like it was a experimental flight suit. But I kind of wish they, instead of the all green palette, I kind of wish they had a purple like down the middle or something. Some kind of purple highlights or something.
Originally, they wanted to kind of do what they did similarly in Amazing 2 with their version of how they introduced Goblin. Okay. They wanted to do that with this one, where he's kind of mutated, but he wears a suit to kind of heal himself. But he wore it because he's kind of he's afraid of his face. He puts like a shroud on.
Mm-hmm.
That way, you do have the purple and green. You do have that kind of color scheme.
Yeah.
But Defoe was all against it. Defoe wanted to do his own stunts, which I give him credit for doing, but he wanted the suit. He didn't want to wear prosthetics. He didn't want to do all of that. He wanted to, you know, have a more weaponized suit, which is what he got, but it looks bad.
Yeah.
It looks all bad. The glider looked badass.
Yeah. It was the glider.
It was the glider. It looked great, but the
suit. And we got pumpkin bombs.
Pumpkin bombs were amazing. But then we got the suit.
We got the Power Ranger.
Yeah. We got the Green Ranger. I'll wait for Rita to come down there and make him grow.
All right. So I just have a couple of nitpicks about this. And we kind of touched on them earlier, but, you know, Mary Jane is the next door neighbor as opposed to being introduced to her later on.
Yeah.
That's just kind of a nitpick of a long time. I'm not going to call myself hardcore fan in front of you.
Yeah.
But, you know, just as a longtime fan, I've known her. That's how I know she was introduced and everything. And also, we didn't talk about it yet. Organic web shooters.
The web shooters.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, Aaron?
I hated that. I know what Raimi wanted to do. I know the reason why Raimi did it. He said that, you know, how could a high school student build something that even a corporation can't build?
Yeah.
Which does make sense, but he's also taken away the fact that Peter Parker's a scientist.
Yeah.
That Parker invents his own stuff. He's an inventor. And by neglecting that aspect or taking away another aspect of what makes him.
Yeah.
You know, for me, Parker has always been the poor man's Tony Stark. He doesn't have the money, he doesn't have the company, he doesn't have the foundation, but he's able to build things that work just as well out of scraps and parts that he could find at like a Goodwill that they could put together. So taking away that part kind of dumbifies Peter Parker.
Did Toby's Peter Parker, did he come off as a scientific genius?
No, he just come off as the awkward outsider.
Nerd. Yeah.
And that's fine because, you know, Spider-Man is a nerd, but he's the smart nerd. He's like if anything, he's like the Sheldon Cooper, but not that flamboyant.
Yeah. You know, I was just about to say that because 2002, people weren't thinking that kids that young could be that smart.
Yeah,
we're sitting here in 2017 and they're being posterized on television as, look, being that intelligence is like more awesome than being in the football team.
Yeah, you got 14-year-olds like getting like multiple patents for inventions and stuff at the age of 14. So, but yeah, I didn't like the spinneret, the wrist spinnerets at all. That was a big kind of drawback. I didn't really like that.
Because I remember when it first came out, that was controversial, I guess, for comic book fans.
It definitely was. A lot of people did not like that. And I remember seeing message boards saying, you know, keep it mechanical versus organic.
Yeah.
And that was a big thing. And for me, I didn't like that because that took away Parker's smarts. That took away his scientific aspect.
To me, it almost felt lazy. It like there's no him like shooting and then he's going to run out of cartridges or anything.
Like
he's
got mid fight. Yeah. Run out through mid fight. Yeah. So that's always like a big gimmick.
Yeah. So. I didn't care too much for it. When I was watching it the other day with my wife, we were talking about that, and we watched Amazing Spider-Man where they corrected that.
Yeah,
and she's like, "It's not organic. Why are they not organic?" And I tried to explain it to her, and she's like, "No, they should be organic." So non like comic book fans and non comic book
casual people, they're gonna think that the first presentation is the origin, and everything else is the update,
which is fine. Everybody, it's all
subjective.
Yeah,
it's all subjective. You can interpret it however you want to interpret it. That's the beauty of all this. So
now there's one more. The one con that I didn't like about most of the Raimi series is that Spider-Man didn't joke.
Yes.
He didn't throw out jokes or quips. He was very, awkward, very, nerdy behind the thing. But half of what makes Spider-Man is that his jokes.
Mm-hmm.
He's, like, constantly cranking out jokes as he's fighting somebody to get him off their game, and he gets the upper hand. And he didn't do that with really any of the Raimi movies.
You never really got that. If it was, it's, like, maybe one or two.
One or two jokes here. Yeah. I think the only joke he did in the first one was he called the Goblin Gobby. Now, what's up, Gobby?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Man, that's all you got. And that was kind of lacking, too. That was really lacking because that's what made him Spider-Man was the jokes, the quips.
Yeah.
All those little, shots to fight people.
And devil's advocate here. We're talking 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Hollywood writers they weren't bringing in comic book guys. At that time,
the writers were taking source material
Hollywood
and going
writers,
deep into it.
The same Hollywood that made movies called American Pie. They couldn't throw jokes in there or have somebody come out there and write, dialogue for that.
If they don't know, it's not supposed to happen.
Nah.
Yeah. They could if they knew that's what happens. But if they don't know, then...
Wolverine had little jokes in X-Men.
Oh, yeah. He had Bub.
He did the middle claw thing.
So, if we're getting on the contrary...
What, they call you Wheels?
I'll throw one out there for you. One of my biggest pet peeves in superhero movies in general is...
This should be good.
Is already, first movie in, somebody already knows who the hero is. Like, I would always think in real movie, like old school movies, that that's supposed to be like this huge payoff for like the second movie or the third movie. Okay. So already in the first movie, and that's not just in this Spider-Man. That's every Spider-Man series that's been out on the movies.
Yeah.
So for it to be already the bad guy already knows who he is.
Mm-hmm.
I know the payoff comes later on in the series, but in the moment, assuming we're just talking in the capsule of the first movie, it kind of brought it down for me a bit.
Well, in the comics, Goblin does figure out who Spider-Man is before Spider-Man figures out who he is.
Yeah.
And so that does kind of pay off, that is source material, sort of.
Yeah.
Because Goblin does figure out who he is. Osborn does figure out who he is, and I will give a pro here, and the way that Defoe would do the monologue between him, crazy him, and normal him.
Oh, loved it, dude.
Back and forth, that was great. And he's talking to the mask. That was great.
Is that like classic Sam Raimi horror?
A little bit, yeah. Because Ash did that in the cabin whenever he was going insane.
But that just. That aspect of all that, not really the same Raimi thing, but that's more Willem Dafoe being a creepy ass fucking. it works with him doing that. And my pet peeve of this movie, it's kind of a trope in other superhero movies, going back to 89 Batman, where you kill off your number one foe, which I know in the comics it's happened before.
That happened. Well, that specifically happened to him in the comics. He gets impelled by his own glider, and. Whenever they're going to do plans for the other movies, 4 and 5, that was supposed to come back for full circle. And that never happened because 4 and 5 never happened.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yes, Osborn dies in the movie.
In the comics, I know he dies. I know by the same way. I know it was the same way. But was it their first fight? Or was it later on?
This was like their fifth or sixth fight.
Okay, so yeah. It was still in the... Where are we talking, 60s, 70s?
70s.
Okay, so...
Well, technically, they fought twice before the last battle, mm-hmm. though, right? So, it is an instant. You already have a couple of rounds in this movie.
Like, yeah, you have the burning building. You've mm-hmm. got...
The parade.
The parade. And you've got the bridge. And then you've got Lisette to the plant house. So mm-hmm. you got four fights before they, you know, it finally happens. Okay. But the original plan was for Osborn to come back in part five to be the sixth member of Sinister Six.
If that
was their plan, that was Raimi's plan to do that, but that didn't happen because we got the reboots.
Yeah.
But there was a plan for his death, and it just said it didn't happen.
All right. So before we move on to Spider-Man 2, I wrote some stats here. Spider-Man. Rotten Tomatoes, 89% their critics, and 67% audience score.
Really?
So, surprisingly for audience score, I thought it'd be higher for audience.
Now, I'm curious how much the audience score is because they started doing that after Batman 3 or Nolan's Batman 3. Because whenever they were happening, people were always comparing Spider-Man trilogy to Batman trilogy.
Right.
They're comparing them both. I'm wondering if that took a toll because of that release. Because when that movie came out, you couldn't go anywhere without people praising it of how good it was mm-hmm. and people seeing it multiple times and,
right.
you know, buying the merchandise. It was a big hit.
Yeah.
I know I was working at Walmart when it happened and we sold so much fucking merchandise off that thing, off that movie.
Well, as good as Spider-Man was, according to the critics also, 89%, 67% audience,
mm-hmm.
Spider-Man 2
mm-hmm.
comes out. I'll tell you right now, Rotten Tomatoes, 94%.
Yeah.
For critics, 81% for audience. So out of the trilogy, I'll tell you right now, this is the highest rated of the trilogy. Rightfully so, because Spider-Man 2.
Even to this day, Spider-Man 2 is still considered either the best Spider-Man movie or one of the best Marvel movies out there. It
definitely holds up. Yeah. Because we were watching it the other night, and I had forgotten how actually good it really was. You know, I knew it was a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I just, because it's been, 8-9 years since mm-hmm. I've seen the movie, and it's from beginning to end, you know, just sitting down and watching it, and it holds up.
I mean, the origin's out of the way. You don't need mm-hmm. the origin story, so you can just jump right in there mm-hmm. and go right forward. And again, just like the first movie, you have the opening monologue with, mm-hmm. you know, him saying it's about a girl again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Continue like the love, you know, the chasing love thing. And it's just great.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a good startup. And then you jump right into action.
Mm-hmm.
You jump right into, you know, Peter Parker being Spider-Man. The only origin you get this time is of Doc Ock, mm-hmm. who is the main villain. Alfred Molina played him.
Which, that's my biggest pro in this movie, is Alfred Molina as Doc Ock. His story, his performance,
mm-hmm.
they actually made me care about Dr. Octopus. And I don't think, live action Dr. Octopus, it was believable, it was... For all intents and purposes, you know, for...
Made
for,
him a threat?
I'm just going to say this. How many unathletic villains do you know can pose a threat and go toe-to-toe with Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Not that many.
And seeing those fight scenes with Spidey mm-hmm. and Doc Ock, not just... We'll talk about the train scene here in a minute, but like the on top of the clock towers and they're tumbling around and... does that lead into the train battle?
Because he has May and he throws May. Yeah. And he grabs the clock tower and throws it back at him to save May.
Yeah.
And that's when you kind of get... This is the first thing that you get that May might know that Parker is Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. she hints around it, but she doesn't come right out and say, I know it, but she's hinting around it.
And that was never revealed in the trilogy.
No, that wasn't. No. Never revealed.
Maybe they were saving that, too.
Possibly. Because I know actually in the actual comics around that time, they did reveal that May eventually found out that her nephew was Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And that set off like a big chain of events in the comic, but just the fight. Even the introduction of Doc Ock when he gets the explosion, whenever he rushed to the hospital, mm-hmm. that's very Evil Dead-ish with the claws. Mm-hmm. If you've seen the Evil Dead movies,
here's my notes. The most Sam Raimi scene, Doctor's getting killed by Doc's arms.
Yes. yeah, pretty much.
That is, that's probably one of my favorite scenes in that movie.
I mean. Raimi always has, he has specific things. I've said this before. He has specific things. In the first Spider-Man movie, There's a scene whenever he's testing on his spider sense, and you see the spitball on the fly.
Yeah.
That's a Raimi moment, because he would do like a flying eyeball in Evil Dead, mm-hmm. which very mimicked that scene. This one, the killing of doctors in a hospital by Doc Ock's arms.
When the doctor grabbed the chainsaw and went...
Yes. that was
anybody
very,
take shop class?
that was very reminiscent of Army of Darkness, yeah. whenever they're fighting the witch in the bell tower. Very reminiscent of that. And... Yeah, that's one of the best scenes. That's for me, it's one of the best scenes because you get that's where you finally see kind of like the Jekyll and Hyde of the claws or his arms mm-hmm. and Doc Ock the man.
Yeah.
Or which one takes over the other one.
Yeah.
And it's just such a good scene. So it's just such a really good scene. But then again, that clock tower scene is really good. It's a really good fight.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, there's we just. Touched on it a second ago, but there's a fight on the train
mm-hmm.
Where, well, the fight is one thing between him and Doc Ock on the train, but
there's... I love this scene and hate this scene.
Go ahead.
I love it. And, well, you know, you want to hear this. You can talk about the fight. I mean, the fight was amazing. Him, like, you know, Doc Ock's throwing people off the train.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man's catching him. This feels like a damn video game.
Right.
Where you're trying to save people and fight him at the same
time. And
it's
something you'd think you would see in a comic book also. And they did it believably.
Yeah, they did.
Well, but I think one of the powerful aspects of that scene was after Doc Ock leaves.
Yeah, after he leaves, because you know, and he's watching, because right. you know he left the situation that Spider-Man has to solve, mm-hmm. and it's a really cool scene because this is the scene where Spider-Man's like throwing webbing out everywhere to try to slow the train down. He tries to pull the Superman and stop it with his feet.
Well, first he tried it and it ripped all the walls off, and then he started
doing more, and he was holding at the front. And this is where I hate the most because he takes his mask off. And I hate that. Because one thing about Spider-Man is he doesn't take his mask off.
Right.
Even if it's battle damage, he doesn't take the mask off.
Even if it's nobody in that train knows who he is.
He doesn't take it off.
Unless it's a press conference.
That might have happened later on. But he doesn't take it off. Hmm. And him taking off his mask and the people kind of... Bring them in the side of the train after saving
body
the train.
Body surfing him, yeah.
Body, well, like, you know, the crucifixion of him riding the, you know, body surfing, and then laying him down like, oh, he's a boy. He's not bigger than my son.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, oh, no, Raimi, why?
I have a different con for that scene, and this is a con from the first movie because Jonah Jameson does such a good job of him
mm-hmm.
emoting the fact of how much he hates Spider-Man. He's trying to get the people to turn against Spider-Man. He's throwing mm-hmm. all these ads on the
smear campaign.
Yeah, the whole smear campaign. So that scene for me would have been so much more impactful
mm-hmm.
if they didn't already do that at the end of part one with the cable car and the city defending him. If we wouldn't have had civilians helping out Spider-Man in that scene, that would have made the fight on the train on part two so much more memorable. It would have brought the feeling home. Like even at that point, even Jonah Jameson realized, oh man, you know what? He's not as bad as guys I thought he was. So that's the moment where you should have had the city.
The only thing I would have added to that scene is that you have one guy in there with a camera, take a picture. He's about to run off. They try to go sell it, like, you know, him thinking he's going to get his millions, and somebody stop him and throw the camera down.
Yeah.
To kind of squash that. Jameson does have some believers out there. That he does have some mm-hmm. support.
And it's working.
I want to ask you this. In the comics.
Mm-hmm.
This whole smear campaign by Jonah that's been going on for years,
mm-hmm.
are people against Spider-Man? And
it's always been kind of split. I mean, like depending on who's writing it,
mm-hmm.
You'll have like in the background you'll have people start saying stuff like "Go Spidey, go!" or "Oh, he's a menace." You know, you'll see in the comics you'll see back and forth with the background people, like with the New Yorkers. You'll see him back there.
To get your liberals in your...
So it's very split. And I like that because it's very split because you have the people who hate him and you have the people who love him and support him.
And it shows that J. Jonah Jameson as the Daily Bugle has influence over at least some people.
If they would have had one or two people in that bus take a picture or try to look for a wall or do something to try to expose him and somebody else come up and stop him, I think that would have added more to it that...
And I didn't get that from the movie, of the movies, that any of the people, any of the citizens were against him. They're singing his songs in the first movie, and I think the second one too. Well,
They're cheering him on while he's stopping bad guys.
Part three is all about that aspect, you know. And I never got the sense like who's buying his newspaper.
This is the thing. If he's the most proficient newspaper in New York, and he's the most number one selling newspaper in New York,
This should be working. Yeah.
Who's buying it? Because if they hate his thoughts on Spider-Man, who's going to support him?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like with blogs today. If you know, if you don't like a certain writer, you don't buy their subscription, or you don't follow them, or you mm-hmm. don't, you know, read them at all. But that doesn't make sense. That was one thing that didn't really make sense. That
there's no connection. There, yeah. It was a disconnect between which I didn't. It's fine because J. Jonah Jameson in the movie was freaking hilarious.
He was awesome.
But I never got that connect that he was actually selling newspapers effectively. Because there's no. I never got anybody saying, "Oh, you're a menace, Spider-Man," or other than J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah, only him. But it would have made it would have helped the film up more if he had supporters here and there.
Yeah,
that made more sense. I think the closest we got to it was when in the first movie, whenever he's about to jump in to the fire to save the screaming baby, to save the old lady.
The cop was adamant on arresting.
Like, yeah, the cop was adamant on arresting. That was it.
That was it, yeah.
That was it. And there should have been a little bit more diversity with supporters and unsupporters.
Especially in part three when he's black suit Spider-Man and he's causing problems at that
causing
point.
Causing property damage.
Yeah.
Doing all of that.
Yeah.
And
still nothing. You know?
Yeah, still nothing. But for that scene, though, I hate the fact that he took his mask off. Because then more people will know. And people will remember a face.
Yeah.
Especially if it's somebody high important like Spider-Man in that universe. They'll remember that face. Yeah. And it just didn't make sense.
And plus, people are assholes. So I can't imagine a bus full of people, all of them, are going to keep that secret.
Yeah.
The only thing you can say is, well, they don't know who Peter Parker is, so it's not like, oh, I know who Spider-Man is.
Facebook wasn't around yet, so they could just.
But he takes pictures for the Bugle, so his name is there. And if they ever show his picture, you know, this guy takes our pictures for him.
Yeah.
People are gonna be like, ah.
Yeah, right.
So it didn't make sense. I know they wanted to do that to keep his face because he's the star of the movie, but it didn't make sense.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense. But I do like that Tobey Maguire's brothers are the two kids that hand him back his mask.
Oh, really?
Those are his two little brothers.
Oh, nice.
So they got little starring roles in that movie.
I got a pro for y'all that y'all complained about earlier. The organics, as opposed to the web shooters. The first the movie did a good job in the first part to be relatable with the things that were happening with Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
Now with part two, I like the fact that they again made it relatable that he's so stressed out that he can't be Spider-Man fully, that he was having issues because Kirsten Dunst in this movie was so fucking annoying, and I was just waiting for that one moment again, a room full of assholes here. I was waiting for that moment for all the bitching that Kirsten does, like, you want to be with me, you don't want to be with me, I don't get you, I don't understand. I just wanted Peter Parker to go, bitch, I'm Spider-Man, what the fuck do you want from me?
I thought you could say, you know, flip her mouth shut.
That kind of happened in part three, sort of. And that part right there, because of that whole aspect of that story, that was a big nod.
He started losing his powers.
Spider-Man no more. To me, it's iconic comic book
scene.
Cover where he's walking away, the suit's in the trash can, and they got that on film.
So
I thought that was kind of
cool. That scene was really iconic. That was, you know, something that I did enjoy seeing because I'm like, okay, that's based off a cover.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool looking. That visual.
It's a nod
really
to the
good.
Comic book fans.
Very nod to the comic fans. That's definitely a good visual. And then of course you got the reveal that, you know, hey, this truck was it? Oh, Garbage Man found this, and he gives the suit to Jameson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
Jameson's all proud.
He's
like,
all
I made him give up.
He's got it pinned to his wall, and then you start seeing stuff, you know, where crime's happening and stuff is happening.
It's up
75%. It's up 75%. Things are happening, and Parker's walking through. And the reports, news reports are doing all this and this. And if you have the DVD or Blu-ray, there's a deleted scene where Jameson actually puts on the suit and he's jumping around his office flipping things, like imaginarily doing it. And it's freaking hilarious because he's still got the cigar in his mouth as he's doing it. It's so damn funny.
Shit, I gotta see that.
And this was also after the fact that JKSM started lifting weights, started getting in shape. So he looks really fit in the suit. And it's just a funny scene, though. It's just such a funny scene. That one scene where he's walking away, it's very iconic, and then that leads into one of the music montages that carried over to the third movie that nobody likes. Spider-Man no more. He quits. He stops being Spider-Man, and he starts going back to school. He's attending class. We get our introduction to Kurt Connors, who is the Lizard. And they got a good actor to play him, too. Mm-hmm. He was really...
Dylan Baker?
Yeah, Dylan Baker. Yeah. Really good guy. He's at back at MSU. He's working. He's able to attend one of MJ's plays. So, you know, things are getting better for him.
He gets into poetry.
Yeah.
Punch me, I bleed.
Yeah. The poetry. But yeah, it's everything's happening. But then, you know, you have, again, they bring back one of Tobey Maguire's little brothers. No, we're Spider-Man. I haven't seen him. You take his picture, right? At Aunt May, and then you have the scene where, this is where May kind of hints, again, that she knows that he is Spider-Man. Because she gives a big monologue about the city needing a hero, needing somebody to lead and somebody to follow. And without a symbol like Spider-Man, bad things happen.
Yeah.
And then, you know, glasses come off. Organics. Well,
that was after the coffee shop scene.
Yeah.
Where Doc Ock attacked, right?
Doc Ock comes and attacks and takes Mary Jane.
Yeah.
Which is another good moment where he's just showing his power, throwing a car through a coffee shop.
All right. My one con I have in this movie, and it's not really a con, it's more of a nitpick because I've been in the banking business for years. But they happen to be in a bank trying to get a loan, and in the same time, he just happens to come in here and steals money. He needs money for equipment and everything else. So he rips open this big vault door, and what's in the vault? Bags of gold coins. Seriously? These are bags of coin. Just like, what is this?
I thought that was awesome because that's like so cartoon cliche.
Yeah, you know? I know, right?
That was so
I was just waiting to see dollar signs on the bags.
I was waiting to see that.
And even as corny as that was, it still reinforced the characters because the banker tried to pick up the coin and May's like,
The only thing I'm giving a pass on is because of the whole thing of it's the cartoon cliche thing, but also it made
Were the little diamonds and the little jewels in the bags along with the coins too?
Right, yeah. But like he would get his one of his arms and you pick up the so he could toss the gold coins and make it shatter everywhere. So visually, it was fun.
Yeah.
But logically, I'm like, what the hell is this?
It's like they would have so failed on it.
Oh, you can play softball.
All right.
I thought you were gonna bring that up. Something to do with the bank. Something to do with the banks. And you're like, you know, they don't have. Where's the security button at? They have it underneath the desk. I have one.
I don't worry about that. But yeah, they should have. Damn it.
Okay. They should have.
So Parker revealing himself to Mary Jane in the last battle. Pro or a con?
Well, it kind of happened organically, I think.
Because
he had already revealed. He had taken his mask off to try to calm down
Doc Ock.
Which to that extent. For movie-wise, script-wise, it's okay, sure. But I like the fact how he just saved her without really thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And he turned around and was like, oh, hey.
Yeah.
Like, and it just kind of happened. And because how else was he going to reveal it? Because he can't just say, I'm Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know, so it had to happen kind of like that. Like in some kind of, she's
in the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't take his mask off for her. So it wasn't a reveal to her. She just happened to be there when he told her to run. She didn't run, and she happened to be there.
Yeah.
And
sign number two that she's not a keeper.
But I did like about that one scene is that the expression on her face was believable. That now everything's starting to make sense as to why he's always running off. That on her, that might be her natural face. I don't know. But her expression.
She did have
a lot
of dead eyes in the whole movie.
That's why she's the catfish. But I mean, that's why. That scene made sense with her.
Yeah.
Because that expression, like, not everything's falling into place. You can read that on her face.
Yeah.
And that made sense. But, again, him taking his mask off for Doc Ock, that he only, he went to one of his science experiments, and then he had dinner with him, and that's
it. Now they're buddies.
And now they're, like, best friends.
The main villain of part two decides to be all good and
give himself up. And that's another... theme, I guess, in the whole trilogy is somehow, some way, every single villain is connected to Peter Parker somehow. So that's just part of it. That on that note, we can move. Do you want to move along to
the? That's the all third I one? Had for Spider-Man 2.
Do you want to say anything else about
Spider-Man 2? Nah, I mean it was great. I mean the fight scenes again were great.
Oh, I have one. A lack of a fight between Harry and Peter. when Harry found out that Peter was Spider-Man.
He kind of, well, because he kind of freaked out.
Okay, he freaked out because, they're building up for part three. This was like the build-in, the lead-in. This is whenever you start to see movies kind of lead, Marvel movies start leading into their sequels, where they're laying the groundwork for it. And this was, I think, one of the first times that they actually did that, because since the first movie, there's kind of been a rivalry with winning the affections of Osborn, and that moved from that to rivalry of success to and Mary Jane's heart to rivalry now of it was you all along, you killed my dad, that kind of thing. So there's always been that kind of tension between them. And I like what Raimi did with putting it in the background, you know, as like a subplot. It's always there. We see it. They don't see it. But the audience,
like, Peter doesn't know it. Mary Jane doesn't know it. No. It's just us and Harry.
And Harry that see it. It's building and it's building. And I think that was just so well done. I mean, that's so great. But also in this movie, one of the best scenes, again, involves Bruce Campbell, where he's the usher denying Parker in to go see Mary Jane.
First making sure he's ready to get in. Then you deny him.
Oh, that was so good. Oh,
you tie your shoes. All right. Oh, no.
Who are you?
No, you're not in here. No, no, no. You can't come in. So good.
He beat Spider-Man twice. there was, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is in part two. When I watch it, I didn't obviously think about this back then, but now I watch it now. It's the scene that I'm thinking of is very, it's almost like Deadpoolish in its humor, but when he's in the elevator.
Yeah.
When there's a dead silence and it's... Howl,
it kind of like costume chafes.
What's his name?
Sultan.
Yeah, him.
Howard.
Anyway, him. That guy. both of them like just kind of awkward. Nice costume, you know, and just
rides up in the crotch.
That was the uncomfortableness. That just felt like a Deadpool kind of moment, you know.
That was the only quip that he had in that movie. Was that?
Yeah,
that was the only quip he had. And it was funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, that part was really good too.
All right. Well, speaking of crotches, we're gonna move on to Spider-Man 3.
Well, okay. Leading into this one, this was after Tobey Maguire filmed Seabiscuit.
Okay.
He got injured on Seabiscuit.
Okay.
And he wasn't. There was a chance that he wasn't even gonna reprise his role.
Mm.
They were gonna bring in Jake Gyllenhaal to play Spider-Man, who was also at the time dating Kirsten Dunst.
That would have been weird. That would have been weird seeing, I don't know.
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah.
It would have, but at the time, they looked similar.
Yeah, I know. But still, that would have been even more weird because it would have felt like a knockoff Spider-Man movie.
It would have. So there was that.
Hell, this feels like a knockoff Spider-Man movie.
But luckily, Maguire was able to heal his back up. He was able to get back in shape. He was able to gain the weight back and do what he could to reprise his role up.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part three. And leading into part three... Because I saw this kind of video footage, or you know, the what do you call it, the panel or whatever, I guess it's a panel that Raimi had with all the cast. And at the time, Raimi was like, "Yeah, this is just going to be a Sandman focused film. We'll bring Harry in and do this and this and this, but like we've got it down to work on for the next two films because I want to film them back to back." And this was at a conference or a panel or whatever. There's a fan. There's always one of those fans. Goes up. What about Venom? I like Venom. And this is where my hate for a certain producer comes in, by the name of Avi Arad.
I was waiting for you to mention him almost an hour into this.
Yeah, almost an hour. Avi Arad is pretty much the president, co-owner of Toy Biz Toys. So when he bought Marvel when they were going through bankruptcy, his deal was, I buy your company, all your toys come through me. All your merchandising comes through me. So he makes money off of the toys and off of... some of the other like shampoos that stuff have figures on it, stuff like that. He has all of that. Avi Arad's response is, "Oh, you like Venom? We'll put Venom in the movie." And that instance, there's a video of it. You can see Raimi pulling the Kevin Feige face with like, "What?" And he looks at him like, "What the hell?" And then Venom was shoehorned into Spider-Man 3.
That explains a lot.
Raimi didn't want Venom in there because, as he put, he said Venom's a complicated character.
Mm-hmm.
That would have to be built up over two movies to get all... First, you have to have the black suit. Then you transition it into Venom. Then you transition it into him being a nightmare. Then you transition it into him being the anti-hero. So there's four different phases that Raimi had wanted to plan out. But Avi Arad, thinking, I can make money off Venom.
Now.
Venom is money. We're putting him in there. So we got a forced Venom in a movie, which was not good.
Which sucks for someone that's like flirting the casual line like me, because I remember watching the trailer and the first thing I saw was that scene where they're having the fight in the building, yeah, and Spider-Man's looking around, and then all you see is Venom come down and like, yeah, grab him, and mm-hmm, then they ended that trailer,
yeah,
with the scene of Eddie Brock on his knees as the Venom, right, symbiote take like swallows and him and so I was like, holy fuck, this is a Venom movie. Spider-Man, yeah, versus Venom. That's what the trailers told me.
Yeah.
So I was,
yeah,
like, oh, man. And then,
well, look at the posters. He's in the black suit, yeah, looking at the reflection and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. The reflection's all red, and, yeah, he's wearing the black suit. Yeah. It was built up that way, but the better villain was Sandman.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the... that's one of my first pros.
Not
I
a bad
was.
Guy, just bad luck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not only his story was good, that was good in itself, mm-hmm, but... If you want to take like the villain looks like in cartoon, yeah, and comic book version and make it in real life,
he's perfect. Yeah. He had Thomas Hayden Church. I think he said he worked out for 8 months straight to get that bulk. If you watch, there's a movie called Lone Star State of Mind where you can see his beginnings where he's starting to bulk up. He's a big dude in that movie.
Yeah,
and then he cut his hair and went to Spider-Man 3. So he was bulking up before that movie. Mm. And it shows because he's a big friggin' dude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when he put that shirt on, he had the khaki pants. He looks just like Flint Marko.
Absolutely, yeah.
He is Flint Marko.
Yeah.
He looks just like J.K. Simmons as Jameson.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is Sandman. He has that look. And even the, you know, him being a crook to support his family, to support his daughter and his wife, that, you know...
Ungrateful wife.
The ungrateful wife. I mean, that speaks tones to the motif of... It kind of brings a realism to the Spider-Man villains, where they're not all billionaires. They don't mm-hmm. have money. They don't have secret warehouses. They're down on the luck people who steal and do things to provide.
Right.
They make bad decisions mm-hmm. to try to have good outcomes.
Yeah.
And that's part of that motif. Now, I thought that worked great until they try to tie it back to the first movie and make it seem like...
Oh, that was so forced.
That was so forced.
I think that's... I don't know if this happened before or after, but mm-hmm. if they had made the decision that 3 was going to be it, if they would have said that we're going to do 4, I don't think we would have got that. Just like the whole Venom thing, I don't think we would have had to had. I think Sandman's story was good enough that you didn't have to tie it with that.
Sandman's story, and then you still have the continuation of Harry Osborn in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So both those fill up the movie.
Yeah.
You didn't need Venom. I mean, you could have Parker have the black suit to start off with, kind of testing it out. You know, have him do that, and that would have been a movie itself.
Hmm.
But I mean, you can add Topher Grace as Eddie Brock.
Ugh, well,
yeah. Well, I mean, you can have Eddie Brock in the movie as him being the rival, but show more of, you know, Parker beating him with pictures to the punch.
End part 3 with Eddie Brock finding the Venom suit. Well, that's a hell of a teaser for part 4.
Yeah, ending it with him getting the suit and jumping on the screen. Roll the
Done.
Credits.
Yeah.
Go to credits.
Exactly.
Go to credits.
Yeah.
But no, we had to have everything else because of Avi Arad. And it felt so forced. I like the origin of the meteorite. That's different. Mm-hmm. That doesn't complicate things up. You know, you don't have to do the old secret wars.
I agree with you to a point. Mm-hmm. I like the you can't do secret wars. There's no way.
Secret wars.
I do like how it is alien, like it's supposed to be, and it shoots down to Earth. My issue with that is one of my big cons I have in this movie is everything is so coincidental. In this movie, like it just so happens, of all the places on Earth, it just happens to land 2 feet away from Peter's scooter.
That ties to his original thing that you mentioned earlier, that everything happens around him for a reason.
Everything's connected to him.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I like the fact that it came through a meteorite. I didn't say it had to blend near him. I mean, with this ties to MSU and working with Connors, he could have had science, you know, like a science badge to get into things to do studies or to do internships.
Mm-hmm.
So he could have had other ways to access in there,
right?
And his suit could have gone to him, or he could have knocked something over. Suit breaks out, attaches to him. Everybody's freaking out. Where's the suit at? They don't know where it's at.
Well, that's the Ultimate Spider-Man, right? In the comics,
the Ultimate Spider-Man was cancer suit.
That's what it was. I knew it was something. I knew it was created. It was some kind of suit for something.
It was a cancer suit.
Yeah,
but there could have been more backstory of happenstance to bring him to the suit instead of it just being
luck
falls. Yeah. He goes and checks it out. It gets on his boot. Or no, he fights Osborn.
It gets on his body. It gets on his.
He doesn't know about it. He doesn't know about it until he's like laying in bed and it starts crawling up.
And it crawls over him.
Now I do like when it first crashed. I love the special effects for the symbiote, where it was just kind of crawling around like that. Mm-hmm. I thought that looked cool. And even then, when towards the end, when it comes off of Eddie, and like he's,
it's full grown. Like you saw that symbiote literally like evolve throughout the entire movie.
I like that.
Yeah, it's growing.
Imagine if they had a whole movie for that, yeah. and not just shoehorned in.
Yeah. You know? I mean, there were talks of having the Venom spinoff movie, and then having him come back for part five.
Oh, okay. Well, are we cutting to current? Now we're doing a Venom movie, aren't we? Like there's
it's still talk. I mean, there. Yeah. I mean, they were talking about the Sinister Six movie for a while, and when that didn't happen, WB rushed to do Suicide Squad to beat him to the punch, and we saw what happened there.
Yeah,
and they did tease it in the Amazing Spider-Man 2, where they had the codes for all the stuff on Oscorp, and they had the Venom file.
After the credits rolled, you saw the doors open up. You had wings. You had arms. You had
that was in part two, right?
Yeah, that was in part two. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever there wasn't a post credit in part one, was there? An Amazing part one.
Not that I remember. Oh, there was. Dude's in jail, and somebody, I think, was a Kingpin. It was supposed to be the Kingpin.
No, Lizard's in jail. Connors is in jail, and the stranger, the guy in the trench coat and the hat, comes in there and tells him, leave him alone.
This is part one.
That's part one.
Yeah. Oh, okay. This is bonus part one.
And then part two was the scene where he's walking down the hallway and you see all the different things.
All the corridors, you see all the different.
Doc Ock's wing, or Doc Ock's arms, and the lighter.
Vulture wings,
and,
yeah.
The or light. The vulture wings, yeah.
Yeah, all that.
So, okay.
Yeah, he had that.
All right, back to part three. Okay.
The first 30 minutes of this movie felt like this was nothing changed. Like part one was fucking good, part two was fucking flawless, and the third we're on the way to like a three-peat.
Right.
Yeah.
The first 30 minutes, I think where it started to go off the rails, I kind of didn't comprehend the idea of what could have been Spidey's biggest villain built up through this entire franchise, and. Oh, who am I? Like
the extreme goblin was not cool.
The amnesia, extreme goblin.
The extreme snowboarding goblin was so terrible. I remember when I saw the figure for that before the movie came. I'm like, no, please no, don't let this be it.
At least give him the hacky, the satchel on the
satchel
side,
whatever. And you know,
it's almost
him more.
It's almost as if like they heard all the reviews from the first Green Goblin. And like, how can we really just like make this worse?
I mean, I read so many. I mean, one of the original scripts that was floating out there that had was that during one of the first Sandman fights, Harry's a casualty, where Harry's face gets burned up and bombarded due to him being in the area where Spider-Man's fighting because he's there to try to hurt and kill Spider-Man. Well, he gets to face this disfiguration. He finds his dad's old lair. He finds suits, and he finds a suit that will help him heal and help him walk. And when the suit's in use, it glows orange.
Oh, okay.
And to hide his disfigured face, he wears an orange shroud, which would give him the Hobgoblin.
Yeah.
And that got shorned out to make room for Venom.
Of course.
To make room for Venom.
Damn!
So he could have got a good-looking Hobgoblin because he had the facial disfiguration after the first or the second fight, and that made sense for him to wear something to cover his face up. But... again, so many villains.
Yeah.
So many villains.
Okay, so let's see. I'm trying to think if I got any other pros in this movie. For what it's worth, just seeing Spider-Man in the black suit,
it was cool.
It was cool for all intents and purposes.
That was cool. Spider-Man in the black suit was cool.
I wish we had more of it, of just him in the black suit, not Venom. I'm just talking black suit Spider-Man. I kind of wish we got more of that instead of him walking around dancing.
I mean, the scene where he webs Eddie Brock's camera and slings it down.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah.
The sewer fight scene with Sandman, that was cool.
Have you had a chance to see the new editor's cut of Spider-Man 3?
You recently picked it up.
No, I was going to. I never did. But there's a new additional scene in that where it's black suit Spider-Man swinging around in daytime.
Huh. No, I didn't.
Yeah. It's in the new... collection. It's in the new three pack thing.
Okay, I have the recent new three pack or the
month ago.
No, I don't have that. Sorry.
Yeah, it's like $30 down Blu-ray, but it's because they have a book. It's
there's yeah. Apparently, like a book. There's new like footage for all three movies, right?
No, the part one, and part two are pretty much the same. It's just now editor's cut because it has Spider-Man 2.1, and then editor's cut.
2.1 has the scene with Jameson in the suit.
Oh, okay, I got you. So, we have that one, but it's like a brand new edition of that movie, and it before this set came out, It was on Amazon for like a day, and then Sony took it down.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's kind of hard. You can't find it online anymore. It's just on that set. But anyway, that's one of the they rearranged some order of some scenes. But the one thing that everybody's kind of talking about on that was there's him swinging around in the black suit in daytime.
Okay.
So there's that, and there was another follow-up scene with the drop storyline of Sandman's daughter who was sick.
Yeah.
Something with that. Yeah. So.
Here's a pro for you. Regardless of how we ended up there, the three being invested in all three of these movies, the awesome payoff of actually having the friends reunite and actually team up to fight Venom and Sandman for however we got there, that it was fucking awesome. Having seen Spidey at the tip of the glider and both of them flying up and then coming back down and everything, it was awesome. It was fun to watch.
It was a good.
It's memorable.
Final fight scene in the trilogy.
Well, it was good. The ending scene whenever they're at the construction site and you see Venom's webbing all over the place and says, "Where's Spidey?"
Yeah, yeah.
That was very Venom-like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If anything, that was one of the only few things that Venom, that they took from the comic into the movie.
One thing I hate about the Venom thing is, this goes back, I guess this goes back to Topher Grace, but in this particular case, I don't think it really matters because when he was full Venom, nitpicking the whole not talking to but just using Topher's voice in Venom, like it was so off-putting, like seeing him crawl on the walls and him talking in a normal voice. That was one thing. And then when he's talking to Spider-Man and you see Topher's face, he's got fangs and his teeth are all like, how did that happen? It's like, it was so weird. Like, they didn't know what they wanted to do with this Venom.
I think Topher Grace wasn't the right pick for Venom, but not in the sense because of Venom. He did such a good job in that 70s show that I was just waiting at some point during Venom, during seeing Venom on screen, for him to light up a doobie. Because I see Topher Grace, even built Topher Grace, all I think of is that 70s show. He did such a good job as that character that I couldn't really see him.
It's
in
such
anything.
A weird choice. Like when I heard he was playing Eddie Brock, I was like, what? That kind
of
reminded me.
A lot of people were like,
For me personally, I equate it to Ryan Reynolds being Green Lantern.
Yeah,
like I like Ryan Reynolds. But that's not Hal Jordan. Like it's a disconnect.
He's a Deadpool. He's not.
Well,
Green
before we had Deadpool, I'm just saying.
He's more of a Kyle Rayner, not a Hal Jordan.
Yeah, exactly. Kyle Rayner. The character, that's not him. They needed to get someone. And in my mind, I go classic Spider-Man. I'm classic, Eddie Brock.
Eddie Brock, the big guy.
Yeah, that's what I'm visioning in my head. And then you give me little Topher Grace,
medium Topher Grace.
Yeah,
no, but still,
which he kind of looks like. Tobey Maguire anyway.
Well, he looked big compared to fucking Peter Parker,
time. If you want to get somebody that's the same age but has the bigger size, Sean William Scott.
Yeah.
That guy constantly is working out. He's always in shape. He's big.
That would have been good,
and
actually.
He still had that popularity from the American Pie movies.
And he needs somebody to be a dick to Parker?
Yeah.
He's good at it.
Yeah.
He's good at it.
Yeah.
I mean, the only one bigger than him was Ashton Kutcher. But no.
I would have had the same thing at that time.
Yeah.
With the same thing with Topher Grace. Like, I'm just expecting him to light one up.
But Sean William Scott thing would have been a better choice for Eddie Brock because he's bigger. They're around the same age.
Now, not to kind of armchair write this thing, or anything, but if the plan was to have Venom in this at all, you would think that they would throw Eddie Brock in part two or something. Not as Venom, but just as...
Introduce him to the audience.
Introduce him. And then that way, by the time we get to part three, there is some kind of tension between them.
Well, they name-dropped him in part one. They verbally name-dropped him in part one. And then when part two's coming out, everybody was expecting him to show up in part two. Didn't happen.
Right.
But we got Kirk Connors instead, which was great. No, that was a great casting. But part three, we're not only are we introduced to Venom, we're given his plight, we're given his his whiny bitchiness, and it's just it doesn't work.
No,
because Brock is a dick. He's straight up egotistical, arrogant, all the stuff that makes him Venom.
He's like in Peter's world when he was a teenager, he had Flash. In adult world, he had Eddie.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
pretty much. But except that in adult world now Eddie has an alien partner to help him. Beat him up.
Yeah,
he's got the alien bully, but having Topher Grace, it just didn't feel right at all. Even with his little spiky, highlighted hair, it just didn't feel right.
All right,
are we going into the bads now? Any other pros? that we're leaving out?
The visual effects for Venom and Sandman were great, and the fight scenes between him and Sandman were really good.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. Especially the when he punches through him, yeah. And he got the box, the one-arm boxer to do the visual. Yeah. That was great.
And even then, like, just everything about Sandman, like, he sees a locket, and he goes to reach the locket, and his hand just pulls back, and he can't grab it.
Oh,
God, that was so good. No, and J.K. Simmons, he's back.
Yeah, he's back again.
And probably one of the funniest scenes of the buzzer and him, like, the heart.
The wife, like, you know, oh, wife wants to buy this. No, click. Yeah. No. And he's like...
Yeah.
Oh, and the French waiter. Oh, he's French.
Oh, and Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell again. Yeah.
Back again.
That was another funny... It was like the small things that he was doing in that scene where anytime Toby would
look at the diamond, hello,
Peter would put his hands up,
yeah,
for something else, and he goes, ew, and he brings it out there, and then he's like, no, and he gets mad at the people for him. No, stupid, go away.
and even the landlord, freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
The landlord,
small bit role, but yeah.
Where's
my
money? Where's my rent?
Even from part two.
He has the birthday money. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So good.
Was the thing with Ursula, her name is Ursula, right?
Yeah.
Was she anything in the comics or anything? Or was it something in the
movies? I think that was eventually they were creating her to be something else.
Yeah. Obviously.
I mean, there was speculation that she was supposed to be Black Cat. Where she was going to go out and start stealing things to pay for the building.
Really?
Oh. That's what speculation was. Hmm. But we never knew because they never expanded on it. Mm-hmm. I know for parts 4 and 5, they wanted to have Black Cat. They wanted to bring Bruce Campbell back as Quentin Beck, as Mysterio, because they wanted to have the Sinister Six for part 5.
Bruce Campbell as Mysterio?
Yes, Mysterio.
Mysterio. That could still happen today. I want that.
And then they wanted to have John Malkovich as the Vulture.
Okay.
At the time, he looked like Vulture. Like, he was still fit, but he looked like
Vulture. He was old, but it's still fit. Yeah.
It's still fit. But yeah, he wanted to bring him back as the Vulture for 4 and 5, which would have been the Sinister Six movie.
Wasn't were they still planning on using Dylan Baker as Lizard?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. So.
And they did a damn good job in these last two movies building him up to be on the side.
That's
of
like the one bit of foreshadowing that they could have, like, you know, started building up that never paid off.
And there's supposed to be some. I know there's some concept art out there of Dylan Baker as Venom.
Oh, really?
I mean, as the Lizard.
Yeah.
There's some concept art of it out there.
Weren't we supposed to get Carnage in part 4?
No.
No?
They wanted to focus strictly on Sinister Six.
Okay.
Going 4 and 5. 4 and 5 would have been one big movie.
Yeah, you don't want to put too much in one movie.
Yeah.
All right. We didn't even talk about it. Surprisingly, we haven't talked about it yet in part 3. Emo Dancing Peter.
It happened.
It happened.
Okay, so I'm gonna lay this out.
Is it too obvious to talk about it? Like, it's because
it happened. I'm gonna lay this out here. So
I liked it.
Oh hell no. So the horror scene with Doc Ock in part 2.
Yeah.
It was short, it was sweet, and it brought it brought it home that Doc Ock is a fucking threat.
Yeah, he's a killer.
It still felt like a Spider-Man movie.
I mean, every movie leading up to this, Goblin killed his board members.
Yeah.
He vaporized them.
Right.
Doc Ock murdered doctors.
Yeah.
Sandman flew away.
Well, I'm not going to get into that yet. I never got the feeling that this wasn't a Spider-Man movie in that Doc Ock scene. Not so much the dancing, but the whole, like, menage between Mary Jane and Harry, this didn't feel like a Spider-Man movie. It didn't feel like this movie was for the comic audience. It felt like, oh my god, number 2 was so successful, we need to cram all this other, like, Twilight and, like, backstabbing shit to get, like, more general audience over here. And I think that gives the supplement of the dance scene that everybody hates. Yeah. I think the bigger focus for me isn't so much the dance scene. You know, if it's the fact that there's, you know, like, people were hating on Superman that there's things like Man of Steel is not your Superman that you read in the books. That's not the old classic stuff. The whole story that we got with the love triangle didn't feel like a Spider-Man story. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something that little kids are going to read and say, oh man, this is my Spider-Man. Like, it just, that was my biggest con. I know it's easy to jump on the, oh, this sucks. Yeah. But that's like a fragment of the bigger issue, which is this movie. After the first, like, 40 minutes, once Harry hit his gobbin, his noggin, this felt like this was not a Spider-Man movie for comic fans. It felt like a superhero trope to satisfy a general populace.
To satisfy people who shop a Hot Topic.
Yeah. I got to... Yeah. Some of the things that led into that whole scene in the first place was the thing between Mary Jane and Peter, right? The whole relationship. Here's a con for me is... This goes back to, I guess, the writing of the movie, but... Mary Jane's nonverbal skills towards Peter. Like... She's all pissed off at him, but she because he's happy because Spider-Man's getting all this attention. She's pissed off because he's not understanding where she's coming from. Yeah. She's got like, but it's she didn't tell him anything. She
exactly.
Didn't, she
typical redhead.
She didn't communicate. What? Yeah, like she didn't communicate with him at all. And then it's not his fault that she became. She went from, you know, Broadway to lounge singing.
Right. He had nothing to do with that.
He didn't have anything to do with that. That's all her. That's
and he
her
didn't
talents.
Know that she got kicked off the play.
Or she got replaced.
Yeah, he didn't know that she started working at that.
He was still being up. He was still being motivational to her even when she didn't disclose the subtle information. Like, hey, babe, I'm kind of fucked. You know? That's all it took.
He was being motivated. He was trying to be positive towards her, but she wasn't saying how bad it really is for her.
No, you think Spider-Man would have kissed Gwen Stacy upside down had he known his chick was kind of going through some shit?
No.
Yeah. So she's making a mountain out of a molehill that she dug the hole for.
And that was another character that was introduced in this movie too, Gwen Stacy. Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah, I think you have a little thing for Gwen Stacy. So what is your take on Gwen Stacy in this movie?
They got Tobey Maguire for his age. He looks really young for his age. Bryce Dallas Howard looks fucking old. He looks old.
He looks like he had Gwen when he was 80.
Yeah. I mean, for Ron Howard's daughter, she looked old. So I don't... It's like a forced love triangle that they threw in there just to introduce that character.
Another coincidence. She just happens to be in the right... No, first of all, there's two coincidences when it comes to her. She just happens to be in the building taking pictures when this crane is... flies into it, and then she just happens to be in the restaurant when he's trying to propose to Mary Jane, and she's pissed off at him, and it's just lazy writing all the way around.
Yeah. Well, forced writing. I think more forced things thrown in there. Look, here's who they're introducing. Sandman. Eddie Brock and Venom. Gwen Stacy. We're still getting more on Kirk Connors with his backstory, with his kid now and everything with his backstory. That's four characters so far.
That they're investing time
into. That they're investing time into.
Technically a fifth if you want to count this refreshed Harry Osborn.
You can't get off that.
Okay, five for Extreme Goblin.
By the way, I thought Osborn was broke as fuck after the whole Doc Ock situation. What's he still doing living up in that badass house? He
probably owns it.
And asking for food. Or whatever. Just...
He has a butler.
He still has a butler.
He's got Groupon? I don't know. If his butler saw what happened, why did he wait till the end of the third movie?
When he's in the middle of a breakdown.
To tell him that. You wouldn't notice that the person you serve is concocting a plan to kill a vigilante that's known throughout the city. You wouldn't have picked up and then say, hey, Youngblood, you know what? That didn't happen. Here's what happened, man. Your dad was the goblin.
Like, squashing in the beginning of part two is like, why are you hating on Spider-Man? Dude, it's your bro. Chill the fuck out.
All right, here's something else that I didn't like that involves Mary Jane. She got kidnapped again for the third time in the movie. She gets kidnapped by the villain, and he's got to save her.
Well, this is also before superheroes started adding strong women. To their movies?
Not only, it has to be about that, but
she's a damsel in distress. She's Parker's damsel in distress.
Yeah.
And so she's like the goddamn princess from Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
She's always getting kidnapped.
If you really want to make it to be the grand finale, this whole whatever they're doing with Gwen Stacy, Mary Jane, they should have had both of them like tied up and he's got to choose.
And Harry gets the other one?
Yeah. No. He saves
Mary Jane first and he tries to save Gwen and then boop.
Yeah, that would have been a good thing. That would have been a good scene to show that.
If Sandman felt so bad about everything he did, why the fuck did he just turn himself in?
He got big bills. I don't know.
He got warrants.
As someone that has had warrants, it's easier to just get the shit out the way.
Hey, he got kids. He needs this job.
No one's going to get that reference except
us. He's the Heath Slater of Spider-Man. He got kids. He needs his job.
Darkest job.
That's Roderick Strong.
Oh, God. Okay.
Keep it coming with the cons, because I'm out of pros. I'm, like, out of pros for this.
I got one more thing.
Okay.
To me, and I didn't catch this till I was watching it again, but a very uninspired score in this movie. If you listen to it, there's bits of, like, X-Men theme.
It's depressing.
Yeah.
Even though some people knew this was a bad movie.
Right.
They don't no fucks to give.
But, like, middle of the way through the movie, it's like you hear the horns from, like, the X-Men movie.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Later on, I hear Batman's theme in there. It was weird. It was like, I know.
Hans Zimmer's like, fuck it. Deuces.
No.
I'm out. Remix.
The dude from Forgetting Sarah Marshall. It's ominous tones. Dun, dun,
dun. It's all Danny Elfman. It's his music. He did all that. So
he's like, fuck it. I'm out. Remix. Like,
the check cleared. I'm gone.
It's in my account. My Ferrari's calling me.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, So I don't know if I did. Did I do the Rotten Tomato for part three?
No.
Okay.
How depressing is it?
63%. It went down from 94 to 63% for Rotten Tomatoes, and then 51% for audience score.
Oh, cheese and crackers.
Was this the first instance of comic book movie fail?
X-Men 3.
Did X-Men 3? Batman and Robin.
Even Batman Forever.
Forever.
But how long ago was that from Superman Spider-Man 4. 3?
Superman 4.
And 3, maybe, even.
Yeah, 3. Yeah, oh yeah, 3. I forgot about 3.
Richard Pryor. Yeah.
So, no, there's been consistencies with after the second movie, they just get bad.
Because by that point, it's producers in Hollywood just seeing money,
yeah.
And they don't really care.
Mm-hmm. Especially fucking Javier Rod.
As far as these movies go, I think they nailed it on a lot of aspects. Obviously, the third movie kind of fell apart for different reasons.
As a trilogy, they're fun.
Yeah.
They're so much fun.
It's traditional Spider-Man comic book.
But if you're individualizing each one...
That's hard, yeah.
That then you can't... Three is not watchable.
Yeah.
You can't watch it.
You can't watch three without watching the first two as like a nice weekend binge.
As good lead-in. You have to do that. You have to do that.
Yeah.
You
know what the sad thing is, though? We said this off camera.
Venom, Topher Grace.
There's been so many, like...
Kristen Dunst.
There's been so many fails in comic book movies lately that comparing them to part three is not as bad.
No.
That for all the pieces that they had, at the end of the movie, all of them got tied.
Yeah.
And we got to the end, and comparing that to some of these other movies, Transformers 5, you know, you there's a beginning, there's a whole bunch of middle, and then there's an end.
Yeah.
And it's done. Mm-hmm. If 4 was ready, go on to the next one. At least 1 and 2, and for me, I built up so much fucking equity.
Yeah.
I could take a 5-10% loss on Spider-Man 3 if I'm gonna recoup that on the next movie.
Yeah, the next one.
Especially if there's at least 2 more coming.
Yeah, and there's supposed to be 2 more coming, which didn't happen.
I like... I do like to just piggyback on that. I like the fact that over the course of the three movies, they kept to the themes. It's Peter, Mary Jane, Harry.
Yeah.
All throughout that, it's all about power, responsibility. It's all
Aunt May reinforcing that whenever the hero's down, the family member
his suit gets torn up in every movie.
Yeah.
All the villains are connected.
Everybody knows him. Probably by part 5, he's got an ad on Craigslist and shit. Everybody knows him.
Yeah.
Hero for hire.
Have you seen this boy?
Your neighborhood Spider-Man hero for hire.
I don't know if y'all have seen it, but Screen Junkies did a really good honest trailer for the trilogy, and it ties up a whole. They tie in a lot of good stuff, and they make a lot of good points. And yeah, it's like they made the same movie 3 times.
Yeah, pretty much. Just different actors, different villains, but yeah, same movie pretty much.
Yeah.
But yeah, as a trilogy, it's good. Part 3 is obviously the weakest, but the plans that they had for the next ones. were so dynamic, to a degree. I think that might have been overwhelming to Sam Raimi because he hasn't dealt with that type of.
Would he become? Would you think? Do you think he would have come back for part 4?
I think he would have, but I don't think he could have handled it.
Because assuming he didn't have the control he wanted, because you said part 3, he was down to like
30%.
30%.
It was all mostly Javier Rod, Toy Biz.
But who's Ivan Raimi?
Ivan Raimi is Sam's brother, older brother.
So he's got Ivan and Ted.
Ivan, Ted, and Sam are the three brothers.
Does Ivan work with them on other stuff?
Yeah, Ivan usually produces his stuff.
So what? Because he gets writing credit for part 3.
He does.
What happened?
He gets overwritten by Marvel and by Javier Rod. Okay. He kind of gets overwritten.
So it's like DCEU. beforehand. It's like it's, pretty much. Yeah, you had writers and you had producers coming in and saying, no.
When Sam has a vision and he's able to do what he wants to do, we get Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
I mean, Sam has a vision and there's so many people who want to put more merchandising into it.
You get Man of Steel.
Three, or Man of Steel.
No, you get Batman and Robin.
You get Batman. Or oh, you get nipples.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But, I mean, you could tell the elements that were Sam's, you can tell that they were there. Like, Sandman trying to get the locket. Him really reaching for the locket. That
Brock embracing Venom felt horror movie-ish.
Yeah.
The fight between Peter Parker's Spider-Sense isn't going off because, again, Venom already... Mm-hmm. That's another part. Yeah. At least they got that part of Venom
I mean, you could tell when Sam is in charge that it's flowing and that's a Sam Raimi movie. The other parts, they don't feel like Sam Raimi. They feel like something else.
I wonder if we could get a Spider-Man 3 cut of just all of Sam Raimi's input. Yeah. And just cram that into like an hour and 10
20
minutes.
That's just 20 minutes of footage. It's just 20 minutes of footage.
So we've been ping-ponging up through these whole three movies. Explain to the people what 4 would have been and what 5 would have been.
4 would have been the introduction of the evolution of Lizard. So we've seen Kurt Connors kind of go up and through there. It was originally supposed to open with the lab explosion, and you see the evolution of Lizard. Connors is missing. Simon's going to go find him. Mm-hmm. Then we get the introduction of Mysterio, Quentin Beck, with him doing special effects of them filming a movie, which would tie into the comics at the time where they're doing they're filming a movie in the comics and Spider-Man's visiting set, people cashing in on his name. So you've got Quentin Beck, you've got Kurt Connors, and then they wanted to bring in John Malkovich as Adrian Toomes, the Vulture. They weren't really specific what he would actually be doing or how he's a part of it, but the speculation is that he's also a special effects person who's doing the rigging for the movie that's being made, while Quentin Beck does the special effects. So you get a guy who knows how to do flights and flight suits and stuff like that with the wings, and a guy who does the visual special effects with lights, shadows, and visuals, Quentin Beck. They're already friends. They're together. So you've got three villains right there, half of the Sinister Six.
Right.
And then you would have Harry recover. He's, kind of lurking in the background, still pissed off at Parker. He knows... He's got another plan to try to take him down.
And this was supposed to be the introduction of the Venom symbiote in number 4.
Yeah, pretty much with Parker losing control of the black suit. He doesn't know what to do. Topher Grace or Eddie Brock taking pictures, taking movie set pictures, because they're going to throw that back to the first movie to where sets pictures got leaked out. Mm-hmm. They're going to throw that back. And so this would have been more of tie-ups, more rivalries, new rivalries coming up, which would have led into part 5, which is Sinister Six versus Spider-Man, all six together, and the return of Norman Osborn as the Green Goblin, the comeback from the dead. So
that would have been cool to figure out how in a real life setting, how do you bring somebody back to life like that? I would have been interested
if it made sense.
Yeah, if it made sense.
Yeah. And they would have blamed it on like the Goblin Serum, like the gas that gave him.
My question is
to run him back.
How is all these villains personally connected to Peter Parker? Because they all have to have some kind of personal connection.
Well, he just laid it out. He showed up on the video set, and he might have done something to break something, and all of them are pissed.
They see Parker, Parker as Spider-Man coming in there.
But that's not a personal connection, though.
Well, these people would hate Spider-Man for destroying their movie or shutting down their movie.
Or getting all the credit for the hard work that Mysterio and Vulture are doing.
There's pictures of the damage... at the Daily Bugle, photographed by Peter Parker, so he gets blamed.
Oh, okay.
So there would have been...
Dude, and then Peter in the black suit, how much of that is the symbiote, how much of that is Mysterio fucking with his head? That could have fucking worked.
It could have.
It's not too late. Oh, man, almost forgot. Before we started recording tonight, due to Aaron's request, I was like... You asked me, you said, hey, why don't we throw out something out there just to see what other people think of, their favorite moment, scene, whatever.
Why do you listen to Aaron?
When it comes to Spider-Man.
Okay.
With your face.
Right, yeah. So, before we recorded, we went to Facebook and Twitter, and I posed that question out there. I said, tell us your thoughts. What's your favorite or least favorite scene, moment, whatever, in the original trilogy? We got multiple responses.
I think it's pretty unanimous.
I want to thank Adrian Roddy over in on Twitter, Robert Medlin on Facebook, and
Donald Johnson on Facebook.
Donald Johnson Donovan. On Facebook.
Oh, Robert?
Donovan.
Responded?
Donovan?
Yeah.
Okay. They all pretty much say the same thing, right?
Yeah.
So everybody...
Well, kind of.
unanimous unanimous about their favorite moment was all from Spider-Man 2, the train fight scene. Yes. And we talked about that for a little bit. And yeah, it is a good scene, and it's
pretty unanimous. Yeah. I think when people think Spider-Man fights, they think of that scene. That's it.
Which is weird, because I always liked that scene, but I didn't think it was that unanimously decided that's that good of a scene.
I think it's the combination of like action with saving lives, with, you know, stopping a multiple things happening, and he's able to do all that. I think that's what that's why people like it.
I think that was probably the out of all three movies, the biggest test Spider-Man had as far as saving people.
Strength-wise and everything else.
Mental skills. Thinking
out loud. Yeah, all that stuff like that.
Yeah, so. Dono, actually, Dono said, so what was your favorite part? Oh, when it ended. But then he also did say that his close second was the tussle in the parade with the introduction of Green Goblin.
That's a good fight, too. Because I think it's that classic introduction of Green Goblin flying around the sky.
You hear the cackle, you see the silhouette. Great introduction.
All right. Well, thank you for everybody that took the time to post. And we'll be doing this in the future. I'm not sure. But, you know. Thank you to all.
I'm surprised that no one mentioned the Electro fight. Just because when he's hitting the tubes, the Itsubishi Spider's playing as he's hitting them into the tubes.
Maybe it's because it's so new and it's not as classic.
Probably because people hate that movie. They hate the whole movie, not just certain parts.
Yeah. Or maybe just the end, because that's the beginning of the end.
Because this is the first time he's fighting somebody that actually has powers that's not human-based. Yeah. Where you could teleport away and there's like mid-flight scenes.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
All right, everyone, we're going to take a pause right now and pick right back up with our next episode focusing on the rebooted Amazing Spider-Man movies, which will be available next week for you. Thanks for checking out and downloading this episode, and be sure to hit the subscribe button to get all of our latest episodes as soon as they're available. So until next time, always remember to pop your culture.
Whatever life holds in store for me, I will never forget these words. With great power comes great responsibility. This is my gift, my curse. Who am I? I'm Spider-Man.